Wait, wait, stop, that's the one.
Welcome to Zenten Speaks, a show where I make new friends and reconnect with old ones. A show where everyone's stories may inspire you to tell your own story. In this podcast, we encourage everyone to get rid of shame, guilt, fear, doubt, and judgments for themselves and for others, and replace those with love, empathy, compassion, understanding, kindness, and to do your best in everything that you do. In essence, to get rid of things that no longer serve your well-being. To be true to yourself and be honest with others. No need to be politically correct. That's out the window with 2020. Here, we tell the raw, uncensored story, your story. And tell the truth as you see it. Make sure you live your fulfilled life without permission or apologies. So, if you have a juicy, interesting, raw, unapologetic story, and inspiring, please make sure to contact me at zenten21@gmail.com. It is zenten21@gmail.com. Or you can find me on most social media platforms. You know it. The IG, Instagram, Twitter, Facebook, OnlyFans. I mean, not really. But yes, OnlyFans. Just kidding. Not. As you may guessed it, my name is Zen, and welcome to the show. Today we have a guest. Our guest today is Amy Elizabeth Erickson, and Amy and I, we talked on Facebook, and we are on this group that I'll post a link on the description below. I forget which group it was. Do you remember which group that was?
I believe it was Sobriety and Beyond.
Okay,
I believe that was the one. Yes.
Probably. That's great. And so I'm very intrigued to hear Amy's story. So welcome to the show, Amy. Thank you for being here.
Hi. Thank you for having me.
Yeah. So tell us who you are and what brings you joy.
Okay. What brings me joy, you said?
Yeah. Who you are and what brings you joy.
I am Amy, and I am, a little bit about me. I am from, born and raised in New Jersey, but moved to Pennsylvania. Right now I'm in Los Angeles. And what brings me joy is my children, and I'm now recently discovering who I am. I didn't know exactly who I was. I thought I was one person and almost had like different personas, if you will, for different situations. But now I'm rediscovering myself and getting to know myself and learning who I am, and that's bringing me joy.
That's beautifully said. I love that you recognize that you didn't know who you are and you're in the process of knowing.
Yeah.
Because a lot of people, they either don't know, and that's fine, because we were dropped on this human body thing. We had to figure it out. And so, but a lot of people get offended, like, with that question. That's why I ask it, because I want to push people, you know, because that's what the podcast is about, to ask those uncomfortable questions. And a lot of people get really perplexed because they're like, I know who I am, but they don't. But if they realize that, if they don't, and be okay, because it is okay, because it's life, like, no one, like, whose rules we gonna go by, you know? So it's like, it's not to know, and it's okay to find out and make mistakes and go through life, etc.
So
I love that answer.
Yes.
So what is your shame, guilt, judgment, and fear, and how are you working on those?
Okay, my shame is, I became a crystal meth addict, and that brought a lot of shame and a lot of guilt, because the simple fact, when I became a crystal meth addict, that brought me a lot of shame because I did that in front of my 18-year-old daughter, and her boyfriend was also living with me at the time. And I used in front of them, and that forced her, as she told me, to grow up quicker than she had to. And she saw a lot of things. Even though she was 18, she was still a child, and she is still in high school. She's a senior this year. So that forced her to grow up and almost, if you will, take care of me, so to speak, in her mind. And that makes me feel guilty and ashamed of myself. And I did a lot of things to get my drugs, and I have a lot of shame behind that too, as well. Mm-hmm. And my fear is always going to be a fear of relapsing, even though I have the tools and I'm practicing the principles of the tools, because it's taken me a while to get here, because I was very resistant to treatment, very resistant to the whole AANA process, getting a sponsor, things like that. I thought I was open to it, but then, believe it or not, one of the facilitators called me out on it, and he's great, and he was right. I was resistant to the whole process because I had watched my ex-husband go through rehab multiple times, and he would get to the fourth step, and then there was a relapse. And that, I was like, well, you know what, that's going to happen to me, so why should I even bother? And that's not the case. That's not true. Everybody's different. But I kept an open mind and was willing to put in the work and trust in the process, and that's has gotten me a different mindset now.
Wow. Thank you for sharing that. I know it takes a lot of strength to come to that realization yourself and admitting it and also voicing it. So thank you for that.
Yes, you're welcome.
Yeah. So have you, since you say you've gone to NANAA now?
Yes, I actually entered treatment. I hit a rock bottom. My rock bottom was basically Labor Day weekend. I was living with an ex-boyfriend who I had been with for a year. We had lived together. And I thought it was a great idea in June to give up my apartment that was paid for and move in with him, who was abusive, and his family, and take care of his mom, and still continue living with this abusive man. And my daughter and her boyfriend had moved out, and we were not on the best terms, obviously, because I was in my active addiction. And I decided that it would be a even better idea to lie to my ex-boyfriend and his family and leave with my drug dealer. And we were hotel hopping for a month, and my drug dealer decided he was going to go back to his wife or whatever she may be, and left me with no money, no nothing. I barely left with any clothes. And a friend of mine messaged me on Messenger and introduced me to a friend of hers. And I thought I had my addiction kind of well hidden. And at this point, I had already taken a leave of absence from my job because they were catching on that I was an addict and I didn't want to lose my job. So before they could catch on, I decided to go on a leave. And I was talking to my friend's friend, who kind of lit a fire to, you know, understand what I was doing. And I had contacted my mom and I begged her one last time to give me money for a hotel for the night. And she reluctantly did. And I had a hotel room for the night and I was contacting multiple rehabs. And finally, they had gotten in touch with me and they were going to send me off to Florida because I originally, when I called, they were going to send me to California and I was adamant. I'm like, I'm not going to California. I was crying my eyes out. I'm like, I'm not flying across the country. And my mom, my daughter, and my dad said, you know what, Amy, we're done with you. And they hung up the phone on me. And so I called another one. They said they were going to fly me out to Florida. I was like, okay. So I text the customer service rep and said, thank you, but I'm going to go to Florida. With that, the woman here, who I've become close with now, said she talked me through the whole process. And I think that's what in my mind, I didn't know the process. I was scared. This was new to me. I'm alone. I have nobody. I have a needle in one hand, a meth pipe in another, and a bag full of meth. And I'm alone in a hotel. My family is a traffic light away from me. My son's job is across the street. And I am not welcome anywhere at this point. And I've been actively using now for almost 8 months, every single day. I only had a break from using was when I was in jail for 36 hours. That was the only time I had stopped using. And with that, I said okay to the person on the other end of the phone when she told me the process. And I said, I will go if you do me one favor. And she said, what is that? And I said, get me on an earlier flight, because if you keep this flight, which was 4 o'clock in the afternoon, I said, I will not get on that plane. She got me on an 11 o'clock flight on September 9th from Harrisburg Airport to LAX. And I have not looked back ever since. I've been clean since September 10th.
Wow. And that's 2021.
That is correct.
Wow.
I went from 0 to 1,000 in 7 months. Lost my apartment, my retirement, everything in 7 months.
Wow.
From one horrible decision.
Have you read the book of Codependent No More by Melody Beattie?
No, I do not.
Yeah, so that's a great book. If you enjoy reading, that could be a great
one.
Yeah, because
yeah, I'll have to look that up.
Yeah, it's called Codependent No More by Melody Beattie. It's a book that is promoted actually in AA a lot. And I never had any addiction to alcohol or NA. But I love learning and knowing about these things. And I also worked with an organization actually back in when was that? I don't remember the date exactly, but I'm from Boston, and Boston was one of the first states that were promoting needle exchange. So I work in that program.
Yeah,
so that's when I knew about all this, and I also knew Codependent No More. But yeah.
Yeah, I'll have to look that up and get it. Yeah, definitely.
And so please tell us your story, how it begun for you in a timeline.
Sure. Okay.
Like with a timeline.
Sure. In in May of 2015, my divorce became final from my children's father. I have two children. I have a son and a daughter. And I had rekindled a romance with somebody I had worked with in New Jersey, as I said, where I'm from, originally from. And because my marriage to my first husband was abusive, both financial, physical, verbal, and it wasn't nice. And I think we got married for all the wrong reasons at the time, because I had become pregnant with our son, and you know, he said it was the right thing to do. And we tried to make it work for the kids. We were married almost at the time for close to 13, 14 years. And I just, mentally, I was not in the right frame of mind. And I just decided that that was it. I was going to do this. And I up and moved to Kentucky. So our divorce became final in 2015. And I moved away to Kentucky because that's where my ex, my second ex-husband, lived. He works for Ford Motor Company. So I moved there, got a great job in cardiac rehab because my background is in cardiology. Got a great job in cardiac rehab, but he was an alcoholic, so a very bad alcoholic. So in 2019, actually it was 2018, Black Friday, he came home and he was pretty much blackout drunk. And the way our house was set up, it was a ranch style home, I could actually smell the alcohol from the living room to the bedroom. And it just, like, it grossed me out. And I was talking to my stepson in the kitchen, and all of a sudden I hear these stomping footsteps, and he comes out of our bedroom into the kitchen, grabs me by the throat, pins me up against the kitchen counter, and is choking me. And thank goodness my stepson was bigger than him, and he got him off of me. With that, the sheriff's department was called. They had arrested him. He was arrested. He got bailed out that night. There was a no contact order in place immediately. And with that, I had filed for divorce. So it was contested. He didn't contest it. They had a hard time finding him. He was avoiding the sheriff to get the divorce papers. Long story short, the divorce was final May 16th, 2019. May 15th, he was found guilty of fourth degree domestic assault. I was staying there trying to find a job because I decided I'm going to go home and move back to Pennsylvania. So I found a job where I was at. Working, and August 1st, I packed everything in the car, moved back to Pennsylvania. August 30th, I started my new job at the hospital, pretty much doing what I was doing in Kentucky, except it was a telemetry job instead of cardiac rehab. So the scary part for me was being on my own at the age of, I was 44 going on 45, I was going to have to be living with my mom and dad again. So that was kind of scary for me. And I was kind of dreading it also because I'd been on my own for so long that I was like, oh man, I have to go back home and live with my mom and dad. That kind of sucked. So, I pretty much buried myself in my job. Looking back now, I pretty much married twice. The same guy, just with different names and different faces, because they were both alcoholics. My first husband became a dry drunk. He quit drinking cold turkey. My second ex-husband, I dropped him off at rehab multiple times, did the whole Al-Anon weekend rehab things to the point where it just became old. When he went to rehab the last time, I was done. I just didn't even show up anymore. I was just sick of it. I also did not like myself because I was an emotional eater. So I had gained a lot of weight. So I was insecure with myself. And I was also codependent, as you had stated. And I just didn't like who I was inside. So I was miserable on the inside, but I didn't show it on the outside. And I would never really let anybody see me, like how I was feeling on the inside, because I was the type of person who somebody would say, are you okay? And I would put a smile on and be like, yeah, I'm great, when really I'm dying inside. So I buried myself in my work and it kind of got lonely. So I said, you know, I was talking to some girlfriends and I was like, I'm going to make an online profile. Well, I didn't go on the best websites like Match.com or anything like that. I went on, yeah, I didn't go on the, you know, the reputable ones. So I made a profile on Plenty of Fish. So I got, you know, matched up with not the most decent people. Like some of them were, you know, cheating on their wives and I wasn't about that. And I finally got matched up with my ex. And in between there, I had found my apartment. So I was anxious to move out that I pretty much took like the first apartment that I could find. And my daughter and I moved in March 1st. So I, after getting matched with all these like people I was not going to date, I had messaged my ex on that website and said, listen, if you want to talk to me, here's my phone number. I'm getting ready to move. So, and delete the profile. So we ended up talking for a little bit at the end of February of 2020. We ended up talking and we were going to meet at some point, I think like mid-March, we were going to meet up with each other. And I ended up chickening out. And when I ended up chickening out of meeting him, I, you know, decided. I decided not to go because my daughter was still around and everything, and I didn't want her. I had like this rule in the back of my head, I don't want my kids, even though they were teenagers, meeting anybody, especially if it didn't work out. Mm-hmm. So we decided to meet, I believe it was the following weekend or towards the end of March 28th to be exact. And my daughter ended up going with her dad that weekend. And that was it. We hit it off. His son, ironically, lived pretty much catty corner across the street from me, believe it or not. His older son, who was married. So we hit it off. We were very close in age. We were 6 months apart. And everything was great. And it was almost like too good to be true great, if you will. So it was like so great. I kind of like pretty much like let him move in like right away. So it was almost as if we got the apartment together, kind of. So there were so many red flags, too, that I ignored in the very beginning. Like, for example, red flag number one. The first 2.5 weeks into the relationship, he disappeared for 5 days. Very little text messages. And then all of a sudden, when he reappears, his mom calls me and I go and pick him up after work because I had worked second shift at the hospital. So I went and picked him up from his mom's house. And he had kept like this big secret. Now, mind you, in March of 2020, that's when COVID had hit and schools and everything were starting to close. And at the hospital, departments and floors were starting to shut down and positions were getting furloughed, except my department, my hours were getting cut. So things were getting tight. So I picked him up. And he decides to tell me that he has this big secret, and I'm like, what is it? And he was a crystal meth addict. So I was like, okay, well, I was lonely. I was like almost like I financially needed him. And in my mind, I did. And I didn't want to be alone, especially now with COVID and everything shutting down. I was like, okay, well, I don't want you doing it in front of my daughter. And that was it. So now with him, I'm introduced to all these different people. Now everybody's on some sort of drug or they're dealing. And it's not the people, like I'm not a judgmental type person because I'm friends with everybody. I give everybody a chance and I try and find the good in everybody. So, but it wasn't who I was. That wasn't the lifestyle that I was. And I was also the type of person as well that I had to be perfect. Like everything had to be perfect. I strived for perfection even as a kid, even in high school. Like I didn't know why. Everything had to be perfect. Like their failure was not an option in my book. So anyway, so I'm introduced to this lifestyle. So I personally, from the jump with him, was I was never allowed to use drugs. And I was like, well, you do know that, I used cocaine back in 2011. And he was like, well, if you ever wanted to use that, you're allowed to, but you're not allowed to use crystal meth. I'm like, okay, whatever. So every now and again, I would dabble in cocaine with him, but not a lot. That wasn't my thing. So red flag number one had come and gone. He had disappeared. So at night, sometimes his thing supposedly was, and it did happen every now and then. He would deal drugs to bring in some income. And he was a very, very, very bad gambler in Pennsylvania. I don't know about where you're from, but in Pennsylvania, slot machines are really big in gas stations and convenience stores and stuff like that.
Oh, wow.
So sometimes he would hit big, and I have seen him hit big, and sometimes he didn't. So now a couple times he had gambled the rent money away, and I was pissed. I was so mad. And I'm now borrowing money from my parents, and I'm lying through my teeth as to why I need this money because I don't want to make him look bad. But now my parents had already met them, or met him, I should say. And my mom, now I knew this now, my mom already had a bad feeling about him. So, of course, I don't want to make him look bad. And my daughter already has her own opinion formed of him, and she's not telling me either. So, we now are getting into June, like summer's hitting, and now my daughter's school completely shut down for the year. It was, like first 2 weeks, then it was like 3 weeks, and then, it was like a month, and now they're shutting all the schools down for the year. So now my daughter's off for the entire year, and we fast forward to June, and I don't even remember what happened, but something happened, and this is around his birthday, which is the beginning of June. Something happened where I pick him up at his mom's, and I don't even, and he's living with me, so I don't even remember as to why he went down to his mom's, who was like a half hour away from my apartment. And we get into this huge, huge argument, and he hops out of my car on Route 222, which is a pretty big one-lane stretch of highway. And I turn around and I'm like, what are you doing? Like, you're acting crazy. So this is red flag number two now. And I turn around, so I get back in, so I'm facing the opposite direction. He's been across the street. My window's down. Now there's people passing. This is broad daylight. And this goes to show, too, where people don't want to get involved either. He starts beating the crap out of me. And I wear contacts, so I didn't have my contacts in. So I'm wearing my glasses. So my glasses get flying off the face. My jaw is, like, all swollen. There's people passing by seeing this. Nobody's calling the police. Nobody's helping me. So I take him back to his mom's house, and I ended up calling his son, hysterical crying, who meets he and his wife meet me at my house. So a couple hours later, he calls me to come and get him, and of course, I do. And he tries to have me take him to the police station. He's going to turn himself in. So we get to the police station. He wants to turn himself in. And because he has a cut on his knee from jumping out of the car, I kid you not, they're going to now arrest the both of us for domestic violence. And I'm like, are you kidding me? You're going to arrest me?
Even, my face is all, even yeah, if he said it wasn't you, is that possible?
Yeah.
What?
Yeah, they were crazy. Going to. Yeah, they were going to. And he's like, you know what? He said, no. He's like, she has a good job at the hospital. I'm not doing that. We both walked out. And I was so mad. I said, this is why women do not report.
100%.
Injuries. I was like, you are the reason why women do not report this. And we laughed.
Wow. I had no idea they do that. That's crazy.
Oh, yeah. They did that. And he's like, well, how do I know he jumped out of the car? I was like, I have text messages where I took a picture of his knee, sent it to nurses, actual nurses I worked with, and said, what does that look like to you? And they said, road rash. The two nurses that I worked with at the time, I took pictures of his knee. I said, what does that look like to you? They said, road rash. I was like, you are correct. But the police officer said that I was lying, or not lying, but he said, I don't know. And I'm like, you're joking. I even went to urgent care where I had a black eye where I didn't even realize I did, where the doctor said, were you wearing your glasses? I said, yes. He's like, well, this injury right here is conducive with my face getting hit with my glasses on. And they had it all for the police to see. That it was me getting assaulted in a domestic violence incident. And no, I was going to get arrested that day for domestic violence as well. Yeah. So that was insane. So, of course, I take him back because looking back again at it, I had such low self-esteem. I thought I couldn't do any better that I'm going to, you know, take him back. Okay, so now a week and a half goes by from that incident. He would use my car while I was at work. Like I said, I was working second shift, so that was 3 to 11. He would use my car while I was at work. He would come and pick me up. On this particular day when he was picking me up, he had somebody with him, and they were getting into some stupid debate over something childish. And I finally had said to the person in the car, I was like, listen, this is so-and-so's world. We're just living in it. Could you guys just stop the debate? He did not like that I said that. So he pulled over on the side of the road. I'm like, listen, I'm like, you're yelling. Just get out. Let me drive. So he got out. He took the keys out of the car. I'm trying to grab my keys out of his hand. He leans over and bites my arm so hard through a long sleeve shirt that my entire bicep, like within a day or two, becomes bruised. He threw my keys, so the other guy gets out, gets my keys. I can't find my cell phone because now we're in the town that I lived in, which is New Holland. I was like, okay, there's like six cops literally that work in this town. I'm like, I'm calling them. I couldn't find my phone. So he gets back in. He's like, take me to my cousin's. I'm like, fine. Just as long as I can get you away from me, that's cool. So I end up dropping him off at his cousin's. And I guess a few days later, he ends up coming back. And what do? I let him back again. So I never end up reporting this incident either, because now in the back of my mind, I'm like, okay, well, if I tell them, because at the first people, because of where he lived, we had to report it to the Pennsylvania State Police. Well, where this incident happened, I just had to report it to the township police. Looking back, they probably would have arrested him and all would have been done and over with. But I didn't, because in the back of my head, well, they didn't listen to me the first time. What makes me think they're going to listen to me this time?
Right. Another psychology thing is that since you're going back for whatever reason, people are going to put it as in, well, you're going back to him, so therefore you deserve it, kind of a thing, without understanding patterns and trauma and why we do. Because as you're talking, I'm having a lot of similarities with your story, because I didn't know why I was going back and accepting. Mm-hmm. But in hindsight, you see it, but while you're in it, you don't. So it's like it's difficult.
Yeah, you don't see it. So, I still take, I take the abuse and everything. So, we're going through the summer, and nothing that I recall really stands out. Probably the same old BS, if he didn't get his way or whatever, he would throw a tantrum like a child. And I used to, now that I see it, and I always used to say it to him, I'm like, you are narcissistic at its best. And he would always say, no, I'm not. I'm like, yes, you are. And I was like, you so are. I'm like, because he had me from the beginning, like the love bombing and then the breadcrumbing. Like, he did it. He did it all. He did it all. And well, I'll get into that, but shockingly, he did end up admitting it, that he was narcissistic. But he did it all. So nothing really stood out. So my car was registered in Kentucky. And in Kentucky, you are supposed to change your registration around your birthday. Well, my birthday is December 4th. Well, I did not change my registration because in my divorce decree, my ex-husband was supposed to pay some of the car payments in lieu of alimony. Well, he wasn't doing that, and he would not mail me my title. Well, I don't know why. I think I was just being lazy. I never mailed away for a duplicate title, which was super easy. So now I'm on my way home from work the end of August. I believe it was August 26th or something. Of 2020, and a cop is pulling out, and I was at Target or something, and I had gotten a ticket. I was parked somewhere, I forget. I had gotten a ticket, and I had mailed the ticket to Harrisburg, but everything was closed because of COVID. So I was like, oh God, I'm getting pulled over. When a cop's behind you, you just have that gut feeling. Yeah, well, I was getting pulled over. I got pulled over for my registration. Well, because the police, or because PennDOT, the Department of Transportation, was closed, they did not receive my payment, so my license was suspended because of that payment. But they did receive it, and it was a whole big to-do. But the reason why he pulled me over was because of my registration. Well, technically, he did not have to give him his information because he wasn't driving, but to comply with the officer who asked for both of our IDs, he gave his ID. Come to find out, he had a warrant for his arrest for fines and costs that he wasn't paying on. Well, he gets taken to jail. So I had to go to court for like a month later for my stuff. well, when he gets out of jail on September 8th, they ended up making him sit for 2.5 weeks in jail. And when he got out September 8th, we all ended up going to a barbecue September 12th. By September 13th, all of us are not feeling good. And my godson, who was 3 months old at the time, ended up going to the hospital that evening for a very high fever. That Wednesday after the barbecue, well, that Monday, I was not feeling good. I was supposed to work a 12-hour shift. I couldn't make it 12 hours. Long story short, we all ended up having COVID. There was a COVID outbreak in the jail. He brought home COVID.
Wow.
Yeah. So all 14 of us got COVID. And at the time, my daughter was back to school. Her school ended up closing that 2 weeks before because there was an outbreak at her high school for COVID. She ended up getting it as well anyway. So we all got COVID, and now we're peak. Everything's opened back up at my job. My job is slamming busy. We are peak COVID. I am so stressed out because my daughter's boyfriend wants to come live with us, which I was fine with because his parents were using, and he just didn't want to be in that environment. And I welcomed him. I opened up my home to him. So I'm just working my butt off. I'm so stressed out. I felt like I had the weight of the world on my shoulders. My ex is giving more or taking more than he's giving, and I can't take it, but I'm not saying I can't take it. I'm letting him. Every line I'm drawing in the sand, he's crossing. So every line I draw, he crosses, and I keep drawing and drawing, and he keeps crossing and crossing and crossing. And everybody keeps asking why I'm staying, and I'm just looking at them saying, I don't know, and thinking in my head, well, you're not in my shoes, so you don't get it. So with that, Thanksgiving rolls around because I was out of work for almost a month because I ended up getting the pneumonia and I was super sick. So I go back to work around Halloween, and now we're into Thanksgiving. One of my coworkers got COVID, and ironically, we're not passing it to each other. None of us who got COVID at work didn't get it from each other. So I'm working Thanksgiving Day. I'm picking up an extra shift. Well, now my dad is in the hospital, so we're freaking thinking he has COVID. Thank goodness he didn't, because he has a lot of medical problems. Now my mom is sick. And come to find out, she has COVID, but she is so sick that she is now in the hospital. My dad gets out of the hospital. Now my mom's going by ambulance to the hospital. She's in ICU. That's how sick she is with COVID. She was a step away from the ventilator. So now on top of that, I'm helping take care of my dad. My brother at the time was living in New York. So I'm working almost 72 hours a week, and I'm just like at my wit's end, and Christmas is now coming. So I don't know how I'm going to pay for Christmas either, because I had COVID, exhausted, like short-term disability. Like, it was crazy. So, and I'm not getting any help from him either at this point now. So I'm turning into like a nasty person, and so there were some times I couldn't even stand myself. So we're constantly, constantly arguing, and, you know, all the time. And we get through the holidays, we get through the new year, and the end of January, we have a snowstorm that lasted 3 days. It started in the end of January, and I think it was January 30th. February 1st and 2nd, and he has my car, and he's not coming home, and when he's, and he's barely calling, and when he is calling, we're arguing. So I'm essential personnel, so I'm like, you have to come home, like, I have to get to the, get to either the hospital now and sleep there, or you have to get home, because I have to leave first thing in the morning. So he comes home first thing in the morning, like super, super early, but because I didn't trust him to be home, I got my job to let me come in at 11 and instead of doing a double that day. So when he comes in, I can just see by the look on his face, like something was wrong. And I just had a gut feeling something was wrong. And he sat down on the edge of our bed and his back was towards me. And I knew right then and there, I was like, pack your stuff and get out. He had cheated on me that night. I was like, pack your stuff, everything, get out of my apartment. We're screaming at each other. The kids wake up. The neighbors above me hear us. So now the police are called on us. And it just turns into like this big shit show. It was just ridiculous. So I end up driving him to his mom's. He packs as much as he can because he was not staying at my house at all. You're getting out. So I don't know what made me, like, each time we would break up, he would always come back. So I think in the back of my head, this wasn't going to be any different than that, you know? So I drive him down, and he, in front of me, I remember, I'll never forget, his exact words were to the other girl, hey, hon, I'm headed down to my mom's if you want to come down and visit me. I look at him. I'm like, are you seriously moving on right now that quickly? He said, I wasn't, but I am now. I said, what the heck does that even mean? He said, I'm going to hurt you like you hurt me. I'm like, how did I hurt you? You know, like, way too, like, you disappear for 3 days with my car. I'm taking care of you, but I'm the one who hurt you. Okay. All right. So I'm thinking this isn't going to be any different. In 3 days, you know, he'll be back. No. I find out, like, the next day or two, the girl that he cheated on me with moved in with him to his mom's house.
Wow.
Yeah. I was devastated. I get this text at work that this is all going down. So I get off work. I'm working day shift, and because I switch shifts, and I'm crushed. I get out of work at 3. I pick up my daughter from work, or pick up my daughter from the house after work, because now when they went back to school for 2021, my daughter was in a different school, like 2020 into 2021. She wanted to go into the school district that I lived in, and she was online. She was a virtual student. So she was already at home doing, you know, homeschooling. So she was done already for the day. So I picked her up. We went to my friend's house, and they were both meth addicts. But remember, I hadn't used this entire like year. Because at this point, we were almost together for a year. And I remember looking at them, and I was like, well, you know what? I might as well become a meth addict now. Or no, I might as well start using meth now. That's exactly what I said. And they're like, do you want a line? And this was February 6th. And I was like, might as well. And that was the day I started doing it, February 6th. And in my head, and I admitted it, for the first time, like a month and a half after I was in treatment, that I thought if I started using meth, I could get him back, because I was so desperate, so distraught. He had me thinking that I could not survive without him. He brought nothing to the table, but for whatever reason in my mind, I could not survive without him.
Wow.
Yeah. So So now here I am thinking, okay, I can control this because the girl's house who I went to ended up being my first dealer. I didn't buy that much that night. I would only do one line at night and during the day. So I thought I could control it. Well, now he finds out I'm using and flips out on me. And I'm like, well, what do you care? You've got your new girl. She's moving in. Move on. Well, now here's the kicker. Okay. My ex can't stop talking about me to her. So now she's insecure and jealous, and he's constantly worried about what I'm doing all the time. But I don't know this until after the fact. So literally every 3 days or so, I'm getting text messages and stuff from him. And it's stupid things. So the more that happened, I noticed, like looking back, I noticed the pattern. The more he was in contact, the more I would use. And one of the person I admitted to after I started using, he flat out told me, he said, you need to stop. This is what's going to happen to you. He listed every single thing that was going to happen to me. Every single thing he said that was going to happen, like being late for work. It's going to get worse. It's not going to get better. You're going to lose everything. And the list went on. Everything he said eventually started happening and then some. But I didn't believe it. I was like, well, I'm not you guys. I'm not going to be you. You know, you're insane. I'm not going to turn into you. So I ended up a 20 would turn into a 40 that turned into a 60 that ended up turning into a ball that ended up turning into even more than that. And now I'm not even sharing with anybody. I used to be generous. Now I'm not generous. I'm not sharing with you. So that was, and that quickly turned from February until like April, May. So now in April, the end of April, my ex and her break up. He throws her out of the house. So now he's bringing me down to his house. So it goes back and forth like that between me and her from April to May. No, I'm sorry, April until June. But in May, I couldn't take it anymore because it was just, he's playing mind games with me and I'm not moving on with my life. Like, I'm staying stagnant, waiting on him because he was giving me false hope that this was going to work, like this was going to happen. And I'm still, like, being defined by him. I'm letting myself be defined by him. And my daughter is now mad at me. Like, my Mother's Day ended up being ruined. And everybody's trying to, like, give me inspirational, like, notes and everything. And at some point, I forget when, his father dies. And I was there for him. I was there for his mom, which his father was his mom's ex-husband. And I end up going to the funeral, and he doesn't show up. He doesn't even go to his own dad's funeral. But I was there. I was there for the family because he was too busy getting back together again with that girl. Yeah. So this goes on from now until July. So in June, they break up, as I told you, they break up again. I end up moving in June. And I'm like, well, how are you going to do this with her if you're planning on getting back together with her? Now, in between that, I get arrested because there's a warrant out for a failure to appear. And I was like, how do I even have a warrant? Well, remember when I got pulled over? Well, I was supposed to go to court. Well, I had COVID. Well, nobody let anybody know and give them the paperwork that was faxed over that I had COVID. So I missed court. So now I get arrested for a failure to appear because I got caught driving again on the suspended, which should have been taken care of, which was. That ended up being a whole thing. So I had to spend 36 hours in jail. So my daughter already moved out because June 1st, my friend had a baby. Her husband was incarcerated. And I was at the hospital June 1st, 2nd, and 3rd with her. I came home June 3rd. The kids had moved out because of my drug use. I had been lying to them saying I had stopped. And my daughter's boyfriend, because he knew from his parents being users, kept telling her over and over and over again that I was using. And my daughter didn't want to believe it. And she went through my purse and she found it. So she moved out. So once I got out of jail, I started moving in to his house to help take care of his mom. And I asked, I said, how are you going to do this if you plan on getting back together with her? Well, supposedly he was not going to let anybody get in between our friendship. And I'm like, okay. Well, he wanted his cake and eat it too. And that's how low I let myself sink, that I would degrade myself by still having sex with him in hopes that we would get back together. That's how low I was letting myself go from April on in like praying like this would work.
And again, I'm
still not moving on with my life.
And
I'm
in 2000, what did you?
21 this year, 2021.
Oh, that's when you met him.
I met him in 2020.
And what?
I met him in March of 2020.
Okay. Mm-hmm.
We broke up in February of 2021.
Mm-hmm.
So, June, I moved in. And I did not, when I got arrested, something in the transmission ended up going in my car. So I had been using my mother's car. And I was supposed to be saving money to get my own car. Well, we all know, obviously, where my money was going at the time. And when I got pulled over, they were trying to impound my mom's car. Well, the friends that were in the car with me were gracious enough to pay the tow guy right then and there not to tow my car and to tow it back to my house so the car wouldn't get impounded, because we're trying to keep this a secret from my parents. Well, it didn't work. My parents found out. Well, my parents found out the next day. They came and took my car, or took their car back. So he, full well knowing that I didn't have a car, his mother would let me use her car during the day, especially to take her to appointments, because she has cancer. She's still alive, but she has cancer. So she needed to get to appointments and everything during the day. So he, full well knowing this, what he would do was he would let me do whatever I needed to do during the day, but purposely take the car at night and leave me alone at the house all night long with nothing, no friends, like nothing to do. So now I already have a history of depression and anxiety. And on top of that, I'm using meth. And when you're coming down from crystal meth, you can get depressed and you can also get angry too. So now I'm left at home depressed, nothing to do. And you're just leaving me and not taking me anywhere, even if we're friends. Like, I'm left home. So right after we get out of, or I get out of jail, he meets his new plug, if you will, dealer, that he is now working for. Well, he introduces me to him. Well, we become close. So whatever happens, a couple things go on between him in like July, where my ex ends up ripping him off and he gets back together with that girl yet again. So one night, the plug, we'll call him, and he comes in. He was staying at the house because he and his wife got into a fight. So he was staying at the house. And he came in, and I had made dinner for everybody, and my ex is not there. And I had handed him his plate, and he said, "Hey, do you want to come collect with me tonight?" And I'm like, "Yes, please. Let me get out of the house." So I get ready, I go out with him, and he proceeds to tell me a story of how basically my ex is pawning me off on him so that I'm out of the way, so that he can have his time with the girl again. You know what I mean? Like, free of distraction. So I'm taken care of, and he can go do whatever he wants. So I'm like, "Oh, are you serious? Okay, that's nice." And I'm like, "All right, well, you know what? Bet." So now the plug and I now have this thing going on behind his back. So, that's how low I got yet again, degrading myself. But now at this point, because I'm hanging out with the plug, I have free access to all the meth I want, because I have the code. He gave it to me to the lockbox where he kept it. So I didn't even have to ask. He told me I can just go in and take whatever I want. So now I'm being kept high. So now my increase for it, or my need for it, has increased like tenfold. Because now, mind you, I'm not working. So now I have nothing to do. But I went from snorting it to hot railing it to smoking it. So I have nothing to do but smoke meth all day long. So that's pretty much what I did. So he and I get into, the plug and I get into a little bit of a fight. And one day he dropped me off at my parents' house, and my brother gave me a ride back to the house. And my ex and I got into a fight because he put two and two together and figured out something had been going on between the plug and I. And I would not admit to it, but everything he was saying was, most of everything he was saying was true. And when I got into the fight with him, he had an impact gun on the floor because he was doing work around the house. And the one thing he was saying was a lie. And I was getting so mad at him, and I was sitting Indian style on the floor, and he was sitting on his bed, and I picked up the impact gun, and I'm like, "No," I said, "No, I wasn't," and I went and slammed it down on the ground, and it had the battery attached to it at the bottom. I accidentally hit his toe with it, and I just looked at his face, and I knew what was coming. I tried to scoot myself back really, really fast, almost like doing a spider crawl, like on the back of my hands, you know? And that was it. I couldn't get away fast enough. He beat the crap out of me again. So I didn't even let myself, like, at that point, I felt the tears coming, but I was like, you know what? I was, as sad as it sounds, I was kind of like used to this, you know? And I wasn't going to let him show that he was hurting me. And I got in his face the last time, and I said, "Next time, you better kill me." And I walked into my bedroom, and then I started crying. And again, I'm not calling the cops because they're not going to do anything. So I took a picture of my face and I sent it to my plug. I sent it to my best friend and everything. And he ended up coming back and he saw my face and he got remorseful. But by then it's too late. And now I'm like, drugs or no drugs, I have to get the hell out of here. I cannot live like this anymore. I have got to figure something out. So I was trying to plan my out. But again, remember I said me and my plug aren't talking. So now a friend of ours come over that like a few, 11 days later to be exact, friends of ours come over. And my ex is telling all of them stories, and of course it's his version, not the actual version, so I'm correcting her on what really transpired. And so when he dropped me off at my parents, my bag of clothes were left in his car, so I wanted them back. And I had messaged him on Messenger. I said, hey, listen, I'm like, are my clothes still at your parents' house? Because I want to go pick them up. And he was like, hey, I was just thinking about you. I was going to call you. So now we weren't supposed to end up hanging out that night. He needed a favor from me. I was like, okay, fine. So everything was going fine. And then my ex, of course, got into a mood about something, and I messaged him and said, listen, I'm not going to be able to get out of the house. So he messages me back, gives me this long-winded, like, thing, like, you need to leave, you know, look at the way he treats you, blah, 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 and I'm like, you're right, you're absolutely right. So I pack as much stuff as I can in a bag, or two bags, and I go. And I ended up lying to them, saying that my best friend C and her husband are coming to get me, and because they live now in Pennsylvania as well, so they did not really come and get me, but I informed her of what was happening. Just lie if you need to. So she obliged, and with that, his mother called me a couple days later and was like, are you coming back? And I'm like, no, I'm not. And I hung up on her. Well, I was led to believe, and this is where I was always naive or gave people too much credit or gave them the benefit of the doubt a lot of the times, that what he said was going to be true, that everything was going to be fine and we were going to be okay. And I wasn't going to have to worry about anything. And one day he went out. This was like 3.5 weeks in of me leaving. And oh, by the way, I did stop by the police after when I left 11 days later to make a report because I still had a black eye, trying to see if something would happen. And once again, nothing happened. And I started crying. And I was like, said the same thing to them again. And the police officer actually said this to me. And he says, Amy, as much as this sucks, the laws unfortunately protect people like him. I said, yeah, you're right.
How so?
Because I said, he never gets in trouble. He's out there right now with warrants out for his arrest because he finesses his way out of everything. And because it was 11 days after the fact, there was nothing they could do. Had I done it that day, he would have gone. I don't believe them, but whatever. So he never got charged, but I called his probation officer, left a message with his probation officer, and told his probation officer what happened. His probation officer called. That was a Friday. His probation officer called me on a Monday, and he was like, I would love to have him arrested. He's like, but I cannot. But because he wasn't complying with what he was supposed to do, he put a warrant out for him. So that was the only way that I got him, but he's still walking the streets, to my knowledge, as of right now. So anyway, so he, my plug, came in from being out one night. Now, at this point, like I had told you, my need for it became greater because I had access to it at all times, at all costs. I ended up using a needle now at this point because he was a needle user. He smoked and used a needle with it. So once I used the needle, that was it. I was completely and totally hooked. So he packed up his stuff that day and left and never came back for me. So now I'm stuck with two people that I barely know, staying at this hotel with like no money. So I have to now write a check to this hotel because I didn't have my debit card to pay for this hotel. So I leave, I call one of my friends and beg her to hook me up with a hotel because she caught that strange variant of COVID. So I couldn't stay with her because I could not get COVID. Then I end up making my way down towards my mom's. And that's when I had gotten a hold of some money and I had enough to stay there, I think, for like one night. And that was Labor Day weekend. And that's when I had said before, my friend on Facebook had introduced me to her friend. It's Labor Day weekend now at this point of 2021. And I'm calling a place in Pennsylvania. So they do everything, but the only thing that they could not do was verify my insurance because of being the holiday. So they said, you'll get a call like tomorrow. So here I am anticipating a call, not worrying about the money, you know, because here I'm thinking, okay, they're going to call me. My insurance is good. It's a PPO. I'll get in. I'll be gone, you know. And nope, they did not call me back. That was Tuesday. They didn't call me back. So now I'm getting desperate. I'm like, I have no money. I don't want to live like this, but now I cannot stop. Like, I literally cannot stop smoking it and shooting it. And I'm getting disgusted with myself. Like, I look like a character off The Walking Dead. That's what I literally look like. My eyes are so dark and sunken in. I don't remember at that point being that skinny in my life. And I barely have any clothes and my parents won't help me. Like, they've pretty much given up on me. My brother has, who is a recovering heroin addict. He's been clean for 5-6 years now. He's given up on me because he tried to help me. And I basically was like, yeah, no, I don't want your help.
I have a curious question for you. Mm-hmm, something I've mm-hmm. noticed. A lot of people who are using, they want a support network and they want someone to not abandon them. But as soon as they get clean and if they have their circle, they abandon their circle. Have you mm-hmm. noticed that, or can you kind of enlighten me with that thought process? Have you thought about that? Something I've noticed.
The circle that I had prior, the people that I was with, they were all people that I was using with. I have cut them off completely. Because like I was saying, if had I got into the rehab in Pennsylvania, they ended up calling me on my way to the airport. And I thank God every day that they called me on my way to the airport, because if I went to that rehab in Pennsylvania, I would not be clean today because I would have convinced my ex or my dealer or somebody to come pick me up because it was only 2 hours away. Mm-hmm. So, and I wouldn't have abandoned that circle. The only people that I still associate with out of my support network, and I kind of really feel bad because I treated them sometimes terribly, are like four of my really good friends who I've known over like 10, 12 years. And they stuck by me through it all. And the only reason why they never gave up on me, they said, was because even though I was nicknames to them, they did not want it to be the, like, what if that was the last time they ever heard from me? Because there were nights that I would go to bed, I was so bad. I get teary eyed just thinking about it. I wanted to die. I wanted that night to be the night that I didn't get up. I was so, because like I had told you, and, you know, I had waited, you know, my life on hold for him, but I was so miserable with me that it wasn't going to matter what he did. Even him and I, if we got back together, I don't think it wouldn't have mattered. I was so miserable within myself. It wouldn't have nothing would have made me happy. Not even him being with me. But you know what? He doesn't even love himself. So how can he even love me? Mm-hmm. And I don't doubt for a second that he doesn't care for me. Mm-hmm. But he, honestly, we don't talk. We haven't spoken. Mm-hmm. Yeah. We haven't spoken. So.
Yes. Yeah. Carry on with the story. Sorry.
Yeah. No, that's okay. So yeah. So they didn't call me back on Tuesday. So then I messaged my mom and I begged her, and she reluctantly gave it to me. And sadly, she was doing it behind my dad's back because, you know, he was like, no. Because my dad is a retired drug and alcohol counselor. So, you know, tough love. So she gave it to me. I paid for the room again. And that's when I called. I was waiting for the place in Pennsylvania again. I gave it one more night. So then I still did not get a call. So that's when I started calling other places. So I was just desperate because I was like, here I am. I'm like, I have nowhere to go. I was calling 211, which is the United Way, trying to get hotel vouchers because still at this point, I was like, well, I want to get clean, but I don't get clean.